We'll be able now to conclude the 8th chapter of Joel's book. This is the Sea of Spirit. And it follows right along with the high demand of Scripture. We have, says Joel, no right to have desires. You see, if we're going to let the immortal spirit, which we are, run its own life, then we have no right to have human desires. So the minute you go off that direction with human desire, you're not accepting immortal spirit as yourself. Joel catches us the minute we move out of immortal spirit by having a human desire. We have no right to have a will of our own. We have no right to know lack, limitation, or unhappiness. We lose the privilege of having fears or doubts or of losing hope. If we indulge in these temptations, we are taken back to our mortal selfhood. The one supposed to be dying or already dead. And so that clarifies the fact that we must make a conscious effort not to indulge our human wishes. And although it's difficult to discern the difference between a divine desire, a divine impulse, a divine will, and your own, it's a lot less difficult than if you're not conscious of the fact that you're to have no human will. Now, you can carry this to the point of absurdity. If you're very literal-minded, you will say, well, do I have to say to the Father, I'm thirsty, do I need your permission to get a drink of water, and so forth. And that would be to the point of absurdity, because if you are conscious of yourself as immortal spirit, you will be given the way to obey the commandment of having no human will. And you'll find that there is a path laid out invisibly through which you walk, in which you might appear to be in some way fulfilling human desires, but you'll know that this is but an outward appearance to other eyes, that whatever you're doing is not humanly motivated. And whenever you find the human motivation creeping in, it isn't so much that you stop that human motivation, but that you return to the Father's house, which is immortal spirit is my name. When you're in identity, you will not cast a shadow of human motivation. When you're not in identity, you will. Every time you find human motivation creeping in, that's to remind you that you are subtly being a prodigal from your own self. You're not living in your immortal spirit. No will, no human desire, no human needs, living in your immortal spirit. And now let's say that you have no capacity to do this throughout the day. You've got to then develop that capacity. And the only way you can develop it is to practice it. So you must make it a point that a day that goes by in which you are not conscious of yourself as immortal spirit is a day in which you are again crucifying the Father in you. You're letting personal sense still permeate. You're saying to world mind, you've got a home in me, friend. Just come right through and do what you will. Now we're patching that vulnerability until we can discard it. Consciously, daily, we practice, I am the immortal spirit. Consciously, daily, we practice, because I am the immortal spirit, I have no human selfhood, no human desire, no human wish. Yes, I'm going to get hungry. I'm going to want a second portion. I'm going to do human things. I know it. But I will suffer this to be so now, while I am still conscious of the fact that world conditioning is so strong that I must still go through some human footsteps, maybe for quite a while. But even while I go through these human footsteps, while I eat, while I sleep, while I behave as a human being in appearance, I am consciously sowing to the spiritual nature of my being. This is our constant awareness day by day. And you can measure your progress by those things which come to you in your inner revelation. You will know you are being lifted to glory after glory by the sublime nature of the revelations that come. They will be the sign that even though you appear in human flesh, you are making spiritual progress in the knowledge of spiritual identity. You will never have to feel a sense of guilt that you made a mistake, because you don't make mistakes. You are spiritual identity. World mind makes the mistakes, and they appear as you making the mistake. But you are always spiritual identity, regardless of what mistakes appear to be there. You do not change. You only change to other people's concept of you. You never change. You are always immortal spirit. And that must be your conscious identification, regardless of what the outer picture says. You will find you are cracking through that veil of the world mind until it no longer has the power to create the false sense of its power in you. In the degree that we have human desires, human will, human ambition, human fears, and human doubts, we are denying and crucifying our Christhood. That's Joel's statement. If God is individual selfhood, which is the truth we have learned to accept, then how can there be a human selfhood at all? The truth is that God is individual selfhood, and human selfhood is the counterfeit concept we have entertained. And all that goes with that counterfeit concept is part of the false world belief that we have suffered through. Even the suffering is counterfeit. You are always immortal spirit. Unless we are able to rest back and float on the sea of infinity, we have no conscious awareness of our hidden manner. What is that hidden manner? Well, he just said we can't know what it is unless we float back on the sea of spirit. In other words, it must be revealed within what your hidden manner is. Even though the Master has told us what our hidden manner is, it is still but a word to us when we say spirit. It must be the experience of spirit, and then you are in identity. Then you are in your hidden manner. Your experience of spirit is hidden manner. This is the realization that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. Your spirit is greater than your flesh. And the more you come to that realization, the more you realize that your spirit is all there is of you, and your flesh is the world concept. We're being taken out of the perishable, out of the transient, out of the temporary. We're being lifted into that which is the imperishable, the indestructible sense of self. And from this comes the conviction, the understanding, that because God constitutes our being, God is the very substance of life. And then Joel says, and that in the presence of our very own consciousness, there is rest, quiet, contentment, peace. Now we are being lifted to the realization that there is another consciousness present than the one which we call our human consciousness. In our human consciousness, there is not quiet, rest, and peace. There is disquiet. There is turmoil. There are questions. There are fears. There are doubts. There's a feeling of impermanence. That's the wrong consciousness. It's not our true consciousness. In the presence of our consciousness, there is quiet, rest, and peace. Our consciousness is God. And only when you're in your consciousness, instead of your false human sense of consciousness, are you in the quiet, the peace, the true silence. When you are not in peace, quiet, silence, rest, absence of fear, you're not in your consciousness. You're in your sense mind. And although your sense mind is often called your consciousness, it isn't at all. It's the counterfeit of your consciousness. It's but the shadow, with shadows of thought. And every time you are in some form of disquiet, remember you're not in your consciousness. You're in an imitation consciousness, which is not your consciousness. Your consciousness is divine consciousness, because you are divine spirit. And right where you are, you can switch channels like that. Right where you are, that disquiet is the wrong channel, the wrong consciousness, the false, the untrue. And in the upper firmament, right where you are, is your divine consciousness. If you will but rest and wait and listen and trust. Here I am. I am the divine flow. Right where you are, I've always been present. I, God, am present. And my consciousness is divine. And I share no consciousness with a second consciousness. The one divine consciousness I am, God, is here now as your consciousness and my consciousness. There is no other consciousness present. In that consciousness, we learn to find our being. We find the living water. There's where you find the real comforter. That's where you find the spirit of truth. Not the truth of the mind, but the truth of the spirit. The real comforter comes as the spirit of truth, heralding the presence of all that is real. We find the serpent who deceived us has no power when we are in the divine consciousness. All of its claims and all of the beliefs that it engendered in us are recognized as false. We lose belief in those concepts which said we were other than the pure, perfect spirit. We lose belief that there is a power beside the pure, perfect power of spirit. We lose all belief in anything other than reality. And when there's that click in you that tells you you've lost the belief in unreality, you will find it loses its power to manifest where you appear. It can only manifest where you appear while it still has you in a state of believing in its unreality, in its false power, in its capacity to do something not ordained by the Spirit of God. This belief we are slowly rooting out so that we have a pure consciousness and pure motives. The more we live in the conscious awareness of God as constituting our being, just the sound of those words to me is music. The more we live in the constant awareness that the consciousness of God is our being. This is stated by Joel as a fact. The consciousness of God is our being. And the more we live in that awareness, the more the natural man is being loosed until finally it fades away entirely. Here's the Master telling us that the natural man fades away entirely as we abide in the conscious awareness that divine consciousness is my being. It doesn't leave room for doubt. The natural man is dissolved away entirely. So even if we have not been there, one who has tells us the natural man dissolves. That means there's a change of consciousness that takes place, an anointing. An inner self replaces the outer appearing self. An inner transformation takes place. You live and move and have your being. Your activity emanates from the divine center, which is the all. And this outer form, though still present in appearance, is an instrument of the infinite spirit. And so there's a Christ appearing as Jesus. Why? Because the natural man has dissolved. All that is present there is divine consciousness functioning, appearing as a form. And that form, as we learn, is not subject to the evils of this world. For it, death has no power. As the natural man is dissolved in consciousness, death has no power. Disease has no power. Pain has no power. The powers of this world are revealed to be without power. Why? Because divine consciousness has replaced human consciousness. The human consciousness that was never there but only seemed to be can no longer report those defects or problems that were never there but only seemed to be within that human consciousness. The new consciousness reveals the qualities of the new consciousness made manifest. And the consciousness of God presence is life eternal, and therefore death has no place. And the conditions that lead to death have no place. And if this were not so, we would have no purpose in studying this message. Because the purpose of the message is to reveal life eternal. You cannot reveal life eternal if death is a reality. You can only reveal life eternal because it is the reality. And incorporates all of the living qualities which are ever present in our true divine consciousness. So we're trying to stay, if we can, in that upper firmament. We maintain and we sustain the evils, the errors, the discords of our life by thinking about them. But as soon as we no longer think about them, they cease to be, because they never existed outside our thinking. As we stop dwelling on our triumphs and on our failures, they no longer exist. Instead, Christ lives our life. Now here Joel identifies that all error is in thought. It never gets outside of thought. Everything we experience is our thought. That is our total human experience, our own human thought, which in itself is not free thought because it is world thought. We are imprisoned in our own human thought. And it reports those things which are not true because our human thought is not divine consciousness expressing. And so the world thinks of the evils that are in the world only because the world is disconnected from its own divine consciousness, which would reveal to it that there are no evils. There is only divine manifestation seen through the veil of human thought. As we stay in the upper firmament, accepting spiritual selfhood, accepting divine consciousness, we are stepping out of human thought and stepping out of the conditions which exist in human thought. Christ's self, says Joel, is our true identity. Christ's self is our true identity. The natural man is that part of us which was imposed upon us at birth, and to which we are now dying. To the degree in which we lift up the I in us, are we dying daily to the personal sense of I. And in the degree that we take no thought, but rest in the sea of spirit, are we letting the Christ live our life? And then each moment of the day we do these things that are given us to do by the Christ within. That's the method always. Obedience to Christ within, taking no human thought, no human desire, no human belief, learning that world mind is only the thought that we have thought to be our own thought. We are really bypassing the world mind by taking no human thought. Now let's sum it up with these phrases of Joel. God is fulfilling himself and his destiny as our individual experience. This is not your life or my life to do with as we would like. This is God's life, which God is living as us. And once we perceive this, we will understand immortality. Now then, everything we think is our life is not, because God is living God's life as us. And God's life is perfect, and that which we consider our life, which is obviously imperfect, is not our life, because it isn't God's life. Superimposed on what is God's life where you are is your sense of life. And as you turn from your sense of life to the acceptance that God is living your perfect life now, you find yourself separated from that false sense of life gradually. It sort of falls away. You begin to know your own perfection. The perfection of your neighbor, the hard crusts of human belief slowly dissolve. Christ in us is bringing forth that imprisoned splendor, blessing where the world mind curses. Now Joel identifies the hidden manna, which we have done before many times. Knowing our true identity is the hidden manna. Knowing yourself as immortal spirit is your hidden manna. immortal spirit everywhere. Knowing God has no limitation, that God lives our life, that God cannot die, God cannot sin, God cannot be sick, God cannot be in pain. This is God life. And all that is not perfect God life is not your life. Withdraw belief that it is your life. For God consciousness is appearing as us. Now, when Joel says God consciousness is appearing as us, that does not mean what it seems to mean. If you took that as the word sound, you would say God consciousness appears as us. Take that word appears and see what it means. God consciousness is what is here. What appears is not God consciousness. God consciousness is living as us, but what appears is the us that isn't. The us that isn't is what appears where God consciousness is. God consciousness is here, and there is a false appearance called us. God consciousness is all that is here. And what it is its perfect divine spiritual manifestation. What appears as us is not that God consciousness. That's why the word appears is there. What seems to be us is not that God consciousness. What we are is that God consciousness. We are something other than what we appear as. We are divine spirit manifesting itself. And no human eye can see that. No human mind can know that. And so that which is here as us, divinely manifesting, is never seen by the human mind. That's why it sees us as we seem to be instead of as we are. But as we know that we are God consciousness, God manifestation, even though this appears to be us, eventually, until we then lose concern for our life in the realization that God knows how to maintain and sustain his life, which is ours, we begin to live that invisible self. Each of us is that invisible, immortal self now. The feeling of this should begin to develop and deepen until you can know that you are not embodied in transient form. You never were in a perishable form. Your exercises this week then are to expand last week's exercise for 3 hours of knowing that I am the life of that one there. I am the very presence where that one appears, to extend it to this universe. Wherever form appears, you invisibly are. This is a truth someday must be constant consciousness. Try it for a couple of hours, and I think what comes to me on it is that there is a sort of a process called thought adjustment. If you look out of a window at a person, you're going to see a person. But if you don't make the thought adjustment consciously, you're going to continue seeing person. If you make the thought adjustment, you will consciously look at person and say, there is my invisible self. That is the thought adjustment. And you should begin making total thought adjustment about everything you see, until the realization in you is positive that wherever I see form, I am. You must consciously make this thought adjustment. It doesn't just happen. There'll be more to say about thought adjustment. It's a conscious practice. You should constantly look at every form, even inanimate objects, and know that inanimate object is not there. It cannot be, because my spirit is all that is there. There is no place where my spirit is not, and I must make a thought adjustment every time so that I am aware of my present spirit everywhere. If I do not make the thought adjustments, I'll find I'm not in a position to fulfill the commandments of the Christ. And I'll find subtly that there develops a consciousness of space between God and myself, time between God and myself, and I start to think in terms of fulfilling myself in time and in space, instead of knowing that I am already perfectly fulfilled, and letting that fulfillment then manifest as I know the truth of self. You might not even like me next week after this exercise, because I find it very difficult. You might say, oh, I have a headache, or this is too much. And it really is too much. But somewhere along the line, you find a little oasis. You find new capacity to do this. And there is a place where you're so grateful that you stayed with it. You find you have greater powers of endurance than you realize. And in a moment, you find the power of endurance was fictitious. It never existed. That's what you thought the human being was doing, because you weren't being your spiritual self. So vicious, so complete, and so deep is the world conditioning that we have to sometimes suffer through these things to come to the other side of reality. And it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And while it gets tighter, something gets looser somewhere else. There is an invisible universe right here. And that invisible universe, few of us have touched enough to know what is there. And it is infinite. And our experience in that invisible infinite is the prize that awaits being willing to identify with it and to accept no substitute. Then the Spirit of Truth will come upon us, who will teach us all things and lead us into a remembrance of the reality that in our soul we already know. Chapter next week is number 9. Spiritual Identity. We might even be able to get a little further in 14 of John, but if we do or not, we'll stay with it. Let's see where we are in John. We're up to the 17th verse of John 14. That's where we'll begin next week with chapter 9, the realization. Thought adjustment is the conscious willingness to look at an object, a form, a condition, a person, a thing, and adjust your thought instantly to know, there is my invisible spirit. And in that moment, you are accepting the omnipresence of the Spirit of God. To that we learn to be true. And so now we're in our 9th year of this teaching. Today was the first day of that 9th year. Thank you very much.